Legend Network podcast is never late, nor are they early. They arrive precisely when they're meant to. Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Extended, a Middle-earth podcast from explosionnetwork.com. Hello, welcome to the Lord of the Rings Extended, a Middle-earth podcast. Of course, Explosion Network's Lord of the Rings series. Today we're discussing the Lord of the Rings, the Two Towers. I always said the Fellowship of the Ring, but we are indeed onto the Two Towers. My name's Dylan Blight. Joining me, Ashley Hobley.
Hey Dylan, excited to be here to talk about elves, dwarves, humans, and potatoes. Boil them, mash them, stick them in a stew.
And Kira Marchand.
I said that in a normal conversation like the other day because I was trying to explain to somebody that I was having jacket potatoes for dinner and they could not comprehend why I was having jacket potatoes. So it's so, you know what, there's a lot of quotable stuff in this movie. I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, I asked someone at work the other day, was like, have you had lunch? I'm like, yes, but I haven't had second lunch or second thirds. Or like, so yeah, I'm just like, just got a lot of the rings on the mind and somewhere or another at the moment. So Lord of the Rings, Two Towers, of course, once again, directed by Peter Jackson, written by Fran Walsh, Philip and Bowen's Peter Jackson, based on a novel by J.R.R. Tolkien. Let's just start with overall thoughts. Now I've got some key discussion points if we don't get to them in normal discussion. But let's start with you, Ash. Two Towers, extended cut, of course. First time watching it.
Yeah, first time the extended cut.
Yep. How are we feeling?
Yeah, really good. This was always my favorite of the three films. So it's been a while since I've seen it, and it's still good. it's a lot of fun. You know, we get the whole Rohan.
Rohirrin,
Rohirrin, you know, of course, we start with, Gandalf fighting the Balrog down the giant hole in the bottom of a mountain. Get Ents. We get, the big battle of Helm's Deep, which is always feel like this epic fight it is crazy that what they did. Just in general. Like, that whole Helm's fight sequence is, maybe the pinnacle of the series. Of, all the fights that they've done in these Lord of the Rings films. To do it in pretty much all practically to a degree, with actual people in orc costumes and these crazy contraptions trying to get up the walls and stuff. It's so much fun. It's very enjoyable, and it's actually, that section is shorter than I remember. I thought it was at least an hour, especially on the back of The Hobbit's Five Armies, where the battle took 6 hours or something like that. No, it's pretty short and concise, perfect length. Very happy.
Very good. Kieran, thoughts on the Two Towers?
100% I agree with Ashley. This is my favorite of the three movies, both when it was originally released and from the extended cut as well. This is where the movie I gets into some of my favorite stuff, because the growing stories, not only with Frodo and Sam, with Merry and Pippin, and then with Legolas, Aragorn, and Gimli, I think each of them takes such a unique kind of turn, and they path themselves very naturally into their own progression. It doesn't, Frodo and Sam, I think, is really good in this one. I have a few frustrations with Frodo and Sam in Return of the King and the pacing that goes into that and how disconnected that can feel a bit in the third movie. But this one does really well. Gollum/Smeagol is such a fantastically developed and well-written character throughout this. This was... why am I blanking on his name?
Andy Serkis.
This is Andy Serkis's kind of announcing his presence as an actor, and especially in CG and in motion capture, and his performance is fucking amazing. You can tell just by his voice and his mannerisms which version of the character they're playing with, and witnessing Gollum's slow shift back into Sméagol, back into his comfort, and then after the interactions with Faramir and the perceived betrayal of the hobbits, him kind of becoming that character and becoming back to Gollum and going back to that safety. I think it's such an interesting storyline. Merry and Pippin get their own sections and they do it well. The extended cut gets a lot more Treebeard in it, which is good and bad. I think reading the books or reading parts of the books, I remember there's a lot more Treebeard in the book and he talks for a very long time and it is very dry. And it doesn't quite get to that length in here, but it does. I like some of their more lighter moments you get out of Merry and Pippin that aren't necessarily in the extended cut. Them drinking the Entwater and growing and going in height and then comparing heights for the rest of the movie, I think is a funny addition that isn't in the theatrical cut. The movie ending with those two getting high is fucking hilarious because that's directly from the book. Like, that is 100% directly from the book. And having the discussion about should we be sharing this with Treebeard?
Yeah. And it's then like, it could like, be his cousin.
It could be, yeah, exactly. It's like, this is dried trees. I think the Treant story in general gets improved a lot by the extended cut, even if we, you know, Treebeard's monologues do draw to the extent. But then the focal point of this movie being Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli's journey and their adventure, this is the movie where, for me personally, Viggo Mortensen steps up even to an even another level of making Aragorn this amazing character and such an interesting character. And maybe has the most badass entrance at, like, of a lot of characters, of him returning after apparently being dead, and like just that shot of him pushing through both the doors in slow motion is some of the coolest moments in maybe fantasy writing and in a lot of movies, especially from that time. Like, you know, I always feel a warm, fuzzy feeling of when he returns to Helm's Deep, of him running into Gimli and meeting up with Gimli again, of Legolas having that back and forth and reunion together, of Eowyn finally realizing that she's stupid and should not be chasing after this man because he's in love with another woman. She's a really frustrating character in this book. She gets redeemed in this movie. She has a really frustrating tale that gets redeemed very much so in Return of the King. But when you're looking at Two Towers by itself, she is a very ignorant character and a very kind of blind character with a lot of things. I do appreciate the humor that comes through. I can't remember if it's in the theatrical version, but Aragorn trying to get rid of her soup or gruel or whatever it is, and clearly not enjoying
it. I don't remember that in the theatrical
version.
I don't remember that, but like him dealing with that moment, I think is hilarious and really well acted, especially when you could feel the pain that he would be in of pouring boiling hot soup, like broth all over his hand. And we get more of Gimli and Legolas forming into actual characters, not actual characters, but actual friends and companions. And,
yeah.
I always really connect with Gimli, with the shot of him falling over, while chasing after Legolas and Aragorn, and just every time it's
dwarves are not good at cross country.
We're natural sprinters. Like, I connect with that very much as somebody who's very unco and not great at running. It is it's very much a laugh.
And, say, my favorite interaction is where he's like sitting on that orc at the end. He's like 49 or whatever, and then Legolas shoots it in the head.
Yeah,
he's like 50. He was still moving because he had my axe in his head.
No, and I appreciate that, and that continues to grow. But even like the brevity of the moment of Gimli not being able to see over the wall at Helm's Deep, and just the brevity of Legolas offering to either describe it to him or get him a box, and you notice that in Fellowship or in the earlier like interactions, Gimli probably would have been really pissed off at that comment. Like, he would have done
because he hated dwarf elves.
Bravado and hater. Yeah. But in this, his reaction is he looks at him and he laughs because it's friendly banter and it's funny and it's relaxed. Like, it is, it's such a good moment. Because
he's got bigger things to worry about.
Combined with that and Gimli having to kind of swallow his pride and ask Aragorn to toss him, but "Don't tell the elf," I think is some of my favorite moments. And then finally, while we're talking very generally, Helm's Deep is my favorite battle scene out of any movie. Helm's Deep is insane. I just think it is so well paced. It is so well done. The moment to moment kind of process of Helm's Deep. There's so many bits and pieces. I always remember sitting in a cinema as a kid watching Legolas ride down the shield, shooting arrows at people down the steps. It's so cool and so awesome. There's so much I could talk and so many little moments about this this movie that I absolutely love.
Yeah, I mean, you have hit on all the major points. The movie's just very good. The Helm's Deep is obviously the highlight, I feel, of the film. Although I loved when I was a kid the trees absolutely going to town.
That is cool.
Yeah.
Dude, my favorite, I can't help but laugh every time about the tree on fire. The tree on fire. But it puts itself out. Gives no fucks. And then as the water's coming on, every other tree's like bracing itself. Yeah. And all of a sudden it runs from off screen on fire and like dives headfirst into the water. It's hilarious.
Yeah. Well, it's what you do. Like, it makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's so many remember the first time watching it and like having Gandalf show up for the first time and you're like, what the fuck? Like, there's so many what the hell?
It's like, oh no, it's someone's got them.
Yeah, I was a bait and switch the first time. I totally definitely fell for it. So, and as far as like differences between, my hot take is this: is actually my least favorite of the trilogy, and that's saying that I don't like the movie. Like, I think all three movies are fantastic. Obviously, it's just that my personal ranking actually
your preference.
It's nothing against it. Like, it's still a fucking great movie. The extended cut I really liked, much like the Fellowship. I really enjoyed all of the extended scenes. Don't feel like the runtime was over long. I feel like it was. Again, I just feel like hopefully the story continues as we go into Return of King, but which I presume it will, even though that movie's like fucking 10 days long.
That movie's long with it being the theatrical cut.
Yeah, like it's long anyway, but like.
I assume this extended edition will have like another 6 or 7 endings.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll see. But yeah, this movie's like very long already, and the extended cut's like even longer, but I really don't feel like, much like Fellowship, I really don't feel like any of the scenes they added back into the movie felt like they were unnecessary or deservingly on the chopping room floor. Like, all of them, the ones I could pick and then look for a list after sort of thing, I'm like, no, all this felt like good to me. Like, you do get more of the tree/ants, whatever you want to call them, but tree beard, but I enjoy all the tree beard stuff, so, and I feel like its pacing sort of helps the movie, and that relationship and getting more Merry and Pippin time of them just talking helps them grow as characters, especially they need to go through the journey they do in this film to get into Return of King, and like their journey shows them choosing to be part of the fight, not just
rather than just tagging along.
Just tagging along. They choose to actively lead the charge and like fight for something. So that's like their important story here.
How I alluded to it the last episode, but how do you both feel about the Boromir stuff in this movie that is not part of the theatrical
cut? I really liked it because Faramir as a character, I don't remember really understanding what's up his ass, you know, like like to put it bluntly. Whereas I feel like having the flashback scene, he becomes a much more
you don't understand why he's so desperate to get the ring.
Yeah, you feel
it's more than just the weapon.
You kind of feel sorry for him, like after seeing the relationship that he has with his father. Shout out to Jonathan Noble.
It's a little bit, over the top, but
it is. But like, at least having this scene adds a lot more context to why and how he reacts and all this sort of stuff. So no, I actually really enjoyed I enjoyed the flashback stuff, and that's like a decent amount of flashbacks, like a 10-minute scene. So
yeah, got Sean B back.
Sean Bean back leads right up. I didn't realize that the flashback would literally be up until the moment that it's like, oh, someone they're having a meeting. Like, off you go. I'll go, father. No, you're shit.
I think
you're the worst.
You're the worst.
It provides further context not only to Faramir but for Boromir as a character, of who Boromir was for Gondor and who Boromir was for his people leading up until the
and why he wanted that ring so bad and
why is it susceptible to
it? It added context to him begging Frodo and everything along those lines. So, yeah, then it adds to this movie with Faramir, and it adds to Fellowship with Boromir in retrospect, which is really cool to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and as Kieran said, I think all the Andy Serkis stuff is, of course, the special effects look pretty good for the time, but they are a little bit aged.
Yep. A little bit dated. Yeah.
The motion capture stuff still like bleeds through. The any moments where the CGI, like the Golem, looks a little bit off, like the at least the motion capture and the actual real performance is there to sort of help keep you within the movie and like buying into that role and that character and stuff. So I feel like the number one thing that's really different to this movie and the first one, it's like sort of to like watching them as close succession like this for the first time in like ages. It's funny how you do go from Fellowship where it is, and I know that's the whole point obviously, but it's you go from Fellowship where it's like we're getting a party together, we have a party, all the characters are together, we're not jumping around to different characters, like we're just focusing on one character every now and then, we jump over to Sarah Man, what's he up to, you know, sort of thing. Whereas this movie, you got like it's constantly jumping around with all the sorts of characters, they're like which I guess is the same as how the books would work. I mean, I presume. Yeah. I don't know. Like, does that feel weird? Like, in like when you're watching them like a week apart, like to see one where it's just like one party and another one like they're completely split.
I think
no, because I feel like everything does this now.
Yeah, true.
At the same time, I feel like this compared to The Hobbit. If we look at the Hobbit movies, where
we cannot bring up these movies for a single episode.
If you look at The Hobbit, it's like we stayed with the one party for majority of that time. We split up a little bit once we got Bard, but the world never grew. The world never expanded. We never felt a bigger sense of the Middle Earth we were traveling through, where this movie sets everything up nicely with Fellowship, introduces you to all the characters, gets you settled with the people in the Fellowship. And then when splitting them off, it uses them to grow Middle Earth as a world. We get Rohan. We get to start seeing the bits and pieces of Gondor through Faramir. We get to see these tribal people that are joining Mordor. We get to go into Wild Men. Yeah, we into Fangorn Forest. We get to see more of Isengard and Saruman and his corruption of the west of the world around him. It immediately, Middle-earth grows at such an expansive rate in this movie, but you never feel overwhelmed. You never feel like it's too much. There's always more characters and more drip-fed, and we get, you know, going into Rohan, you meet Carl Urban's character. Like, you get that bit of context before you actually get to the Rohirrims and you get to King Aodin. Like, it builds so well and so nicely on each other that it does a better job of The Hobbit, which you look at and you go crazy considering how much more book there is of Lord of the Rings and how much more there is to do, and they don't fail at doing it.
One question I have coming out of this movie, and I feel like they either do a really bad job of explaining it or maybe they fix it in Return of the King and I'm just not aware because I haven't watched extended cut of that yet, but they never really explain why Saruman turns heel.
It's just that he is corrupted by Saruman.
Is it really that simple?
So I had to look up to this because I never truly understood this. The Eye of Sauron is a choice that was made by Peter Jackson, because there's actually no physical representation of Sauron in the book Lord of the Rings. They just talk about his presence, that his form and his presence is what is corrupting the world. It's what corrupts Sauron when Sauron tries to approach him.
Corrupts Saruman.
Pardon? Saruman, fuck. I hate the two names. Some of the things I'm like, Tolkien, couldn't you have like picked slightly further apart names? Come on.
I think because of that, you often feel, and people get very confused about, okay, what is the eye? What is that? His body now? Is that his spirit? What's the go there? It's just Peter Jackson just thought people would find it easier to connect with a bad guy if he had a physical form.
Yeah, it makes sense as like a visual.
Yeah.
So,
and I always wonder, like, if Saruman's like plan was to ever like actually work with
Sauron,
or just steal, like at the end of the day, was he just going to steal the ring for himself? Like, because the thing is, once he has that ring in his hand, you tell me if he captures the hobbits, he brings them up to his tower, you know, well, he has the ring in his hands. Do you want to tell me he's not staring at that thing? He doesn't get corrupted by the power of the ring and stick that sucker on. You know what I mean? Like,
and he can probably take out those ring wraiths, right?
I mean, yeah, probably. Like, if I had to choose, I would say that he would be corrupted. He would choose to put on the ring and choose to fight and actually try and just rule himself. Like, not with Sauron. So I don't feel like he's ever really working for Sauron. He's just pretending to.
Yeah. My question, where was Radagast during all this?
That's a good question, yeah. He could have really helped out.
No, the question is, where is any of the other mages during this point? Because there are the two blue mages, the red mage, the brown mage, and I think there's one other that I can't remember. I think he's green is the other one.
Did they ever explain that?
They do in the books. It doesn't. I think something happened to the blue ones. I can't remember. They're very, very side characters. Tolkien in Lord of the Rings is very much like, you know what? Two wizards is kind of enough for this story. Like, two wizards that both end up being the white. We don't need to complicate anything else with any other colors. Let's keep it on the gray to white to black scale. Let's keep it there. How do you feel? Like, is God Ian McKellen coming back into this story and Gandalf coming back to this story is amazing. Is so...
It is, because it is a different character. It's not the Gandalf that we know from Fellowship or from the Hobbit films.
Yep.
It definitely feels like a different version of Gandalf.
So that's something I'm always like... So I've always just taken it as... So Saruman is no longer the White Wizard. So he's now corrupted and is like whatever he is. So nature or whatever, I don't know, like a greater being.
I don't know how he actually survives, but
yeah, a greater being decides to rebirth Gandalf as the White Wizard.
So as in putting in layman terms, so Gandalf is a demigod. So Gandalf as a character is a demigod. It's why... Cate Blanchett's character refers to him by a different name because that's his actual name, not Gandalf.
Mithandriel.
Yes, that is his demigod name. And so when he returns, obviously he gets sent back as with the thing of you're going back, but once you've done your job, that's it. You're done with this world. Like, you need to leave when you need to pass on once that finishes. And so that is, he's reborn as Gandalf the White. Gods and that kind of thing are never truly explained in Lord of the Rings. They go into it a bit in the appendices and the Silmarillion.
Whatever it's called.
But, for this, it's just a case of Gandalf fought the Balrog. It's kind of like your job's not done yet, but great job killing the Balrog. Come back up as a stronger, more powerful version, because Saruman is supposed to be the pure white mage. He's supposed to be the guardian of Middle Earth. He's supposed to be pure, and like, it's interesting because you see, even from the start of Lord of the Rings, Saruman's clothing isn't totally white. Like, it has a darker, more matted kind of tone to the white. Like, it has been corrupted or tinged, but the Gandalf the White who we get in this is pure white. Like, his clothing and everything about him is white through and through, whereas even in Saruman's hair, he has kind of parts black and regrowth happening throughout his hair to show that corruption that's happened and took place within him, compared to Gandalf the White, who is a pure being of good and the kind of the embodiment of good in the world.
Well, I'm intrigued because we've had characters come back in this film, be it Boromir. From my memory, Saruman never is in Return of the Kings, and now I'm wondering if
he is.
Is he? Okay, because I literally cannot remember.
There's a very specific reason he's not in the theatrical cut.
Yeah, because I was thinking about it after watching this.
He whips his dick out.
I was like, in my memory, all I remember is Two Towers, they end, and they're like, he's in that tower, shit's fucked, and then by the time Return of the King comes around, you're just supposed to be like,
Tree's probably killed him. In the theatrical cut, the only thing that's referenced to Saruman is that he has locked himself away. And he is barricaded and locked himself in the tower.
Scared of water.
and that's where it's left. In the extended cut, you get the actual answer of what happens.
Okay. So, yeah, looking forward to that. Because that was something I was thinking about watching this. I'm like, they never really explain what happens to him. Yeah, so that's the whole Gandalf and Saruman and White Wizard and all that stuff's quite interesting. But I don't feel like they have to fully explain everything there, so that's fine.
That's the nice thing about Lord of the Rings in general, and the nice thing they kept with these movies is that Tolkien never felt like he needed to explain everything.
No,
he gave you enough information so you could read along with it and understand the world behind it. But beyond that, it was just that was the way it was.
Was, off the top of your head, is all that stuff with the elves, and I can't remember their characters' names, like Aragorn's like girlfriend, and
so you mean from like the elves
Riverdale,
Rivendell, yeah,
Rivendell. Is all that stuff in the theatrical cut?
As in with like her leaving and stuff.
Yeah,
like
all that sort of stuff. Yeah. Is it okay?
Yeah, that's all in the theatrical.
Yeah, they want to make sure Liv Tyler was in the movie.
Yeah. I can't remember.
That's why she was in the first one.
It's always the interesting thing where I actually really like, shout out to Aragorn's horse, which is like the most badass horse ever. That's just like, oi, dickhead, you're alive, get up. We've got to go. But I always find the visions or the dreams are very interesting because it's not quite clear if they are events that took place prior to the Fellowship leaving, or if they're just pure visions that Aragorn is having in the moment.
Yeah.
Because there is very much a mixture between the two of them.
That was the other thing about Aragorn. In that that scene we was talking about earlier where he's trying to drink the soup, which was added. That is actually the only time he clearly gets asked how old he is and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that wasn't actually in the theatrical cut, so that means that anyone watching just the theatrical cut just gets told that he's older than he looks, but never really knows how old he is.
No.
So it's funny. Ants, trees. Great.
Yeah.
Treebeard. What are our final votes on him and all that sort of stuff? Because I find it very funny. I find all the you know, just gotta take things. No rushing.
They need to speed things up. That's my opinion.
Yeah, like all that sort of stuff. I find it quite funny. And Merry and Pippin.
They were there for like a day, and they only just finished saying good morning.
Yep, like all of that sort. All that.
I find it very funny when you juxtapose that against the Battle of Helm's Deep and everything happening over there, and then it just keeps coming back to Merry and Pippin, like trying not to lose their shit over the tree. Like I love the scene where Treebeard comes back and he's like, I told them your names.
Yeah.
And we have agreed
you're not orcs. Yeah.
Like, just that is... I will say, right, this is maybe across the entire three movies, and maybe we'll include The Hobbit as well. Don't know why.
Why not?
But the orc that chases Merry and Pippin into the Fangorn is like... I don't know why. A, the most quotable orc out of the entire franchise, but he's the most memorable orc out of the lot. For whatever reason, I know a lot of his lines. I can picture him extremely clearly in my head. And every time he comes on scene at the start of this movie, I'm like, hey, it's that guy. He's going to
poke. What are his lines other than, I'm bloody hungry?
No, he's like, scream.
The legs.
No one is going to hear you.
Oh.
I'm going to cut another maggot hole in your belly. Just stuff like that.
Very quite just stuff you could use in your everyday.
Stuff you could use in everyday life.
Say but all the time.
Between that and meats, it wasn't him, but meats back on the menu, boys. Like, just that whole scene is just, it's so good. Like, just seeing the orcs in that, I don't know, there's something about brevity. And because it needs to be added, nobody listening has probably knows this. You two probably definitely don't know this. This is a very obscure piece of Lord of the Rings behind the scenes lore. But did you know that when they get to the fiery corpses and Viggo Mortensen / Aragorn kicks that helmet, he broke his toe. And that's the cut where he broke his toe because he kicked the helmet so hard and they kept it in.
I did know that. solely from a like random movie trivia YouTube video thing or like some of those sorts of things.
It was really sad because I was watching the movie by myself this time, but normally I need to yell it out and talk about that.
Hey guys, did you know? Did you know?
Every fucking time. It's as bad as like somebody watching the room. I have to do it every fucking time.
It was really weird how you tweeted that out randomly.
Just randomly at 3:30 in the afternoon, Kieran's just tweeting like, hey guys, random movie fact, did you know in the Two Towers, for some reason, I'm watching this. Yeah, I don't know. What is there anything else you want to shout out, talk about in particular, Ash?
Frodo, you know, we see his continued corruption with the ring, his relationship with Gollum and wanting or hoping that, you know, Gollum can be redeemed, more to prove that, you know, he's going to be redeemable.
Yeah.
At the end of all this.
He puts a lot of himself within Gollum.
Yeah, he sees a lot of himself in Gollum, which is not good because Gollum is
You also very get to the end gone. Of the movie, you just be like, fucking hell, Frodo and Sam, just kiss already.
Just kill. I know, you know. There's also, so I think it's a little bit of a dick move to like let Sam keep calling you Mr. Frodo this entire time.
No, I feel like it's something.
Is it like at some point you're like, hey, just call me Frodo?
I feel like they have known each other for so long and Frodo's probably in the past been like, dude, don't. Just don't. Just don't.
I assume it's because there's like so many Baggins, it's just like you don't call hobbits by Mr. Baggins. You say their first name because then that's a better word. Like you say Mr. Baggins, it's like, oh, there's like 500 of them. But if you say Mr. Frodo, there's only one.
The one that gets me is just Sam referring to himself as your Sam.
Yeah.
That one I'm always like,
compared to the other Sam, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. I thought that during the movie. I was like, ah, yes. Yeah, compared to all the other Sams.
The other Sam's Sam. He's met? Yeah.
Yeah.
Along the way?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and again, Gollum is great performance. You know, that whole sequence where he's talking to himself and, like, telling himself to go away.
Yeah.
And, like, being surprised when it works. Yeah. It works because he's such a... The CGI, I think, holds up because to a degree because he is such a deformed character. So you're not going for lifelike.
I don't know if it's maybe I just haven't noticed before, but watching Gollum's movement in the final scenes of this movie, and you could tell how hurt and injured he was from the beatings he took from Faramir and his band of merry Gondorians. But like that combined with
not as much as hurt by being betrayed by the master.
Exactly. But then also on top of that, Sam actually being nice to Gollum, being like,
yeah,
hey, you know,
hey, we good, like, right?
We good, right? Like, Holmes, we all right?
To be fair, he says it. He says it like someone trying to like, fuck, I'm forgetting what the word, but like guilt trip, like or
trying to cover himself,
up, yeah, or something like that. But like he's right. Like they didn't actually do anything. Like Frodo didn't actually do anything
legally. We would not be responsible.
No. So yeah.
Yeah. That's after Sam like kicks the shit out of him like after the movie.
Yeah. I mean that's also true. He deserved it for I mean, to be fair, Gollum did try to kill them first, so
yeah.
Just saying. That's fine.
100% true.
Also
I assume this is in only in the extended cut, but the elven rope bit. I don't
know. Oh yeah, no, I think part of me thinks it is in the theater.
Surely it would be, but well, actually, no. I don't know if it would or would not be because the addition of their gifts is a additional scene in Fellowship.
Mm.
Okay.
So that whole scene where they get the gifts and
because he has the rope for like the Gollum scene with Gollum and the rope is in the theatrical cut.
Yeah.
So I don't. But
you don't need to explain them using it to go down.
Yeah, they never explain. Maybe in the theatrical, I don't actually remember. Like maybe in a theatrical cut, you just think it's a random rope. Like, do they ever? Maybe in a theatrical cut, it's never like
you just like, it's a rope around my neck is burning me.
Yeah. That's why I thought it was funny. Yeah, because I don't. That's the you definitely never have seen them get the gifts into the extended cut, and then in this, I don't remember that scene either in the theatrical cut where I just thought it was sort of funny Well, my not so good. Whatever, just tugs on it. That's how ropes work in Death Stranding.
Yep. Also, Wormtongue, the original slimy bastard.
Yeah. All in his name. It's like the most obvious name in this whole series.
Like, why am I putting this guy in such a high position? Yeah.
Also, I like the fact that, what's him called? The king, whatever his name is. He's so truly fucked up, like just looks like he's off his rocker, and no one's ever questioning anything. Like no one's like, this dude needs help.
No, nobody's like, hey, what's up? And then you find out like what he looked like normally.
And he doesn't look anything alike. Yeah.
I mean, that transformation scene, it's not great, but... No.
But like that, he just looks so, and everyone's like, his daughter, and like all these people, like, he's totally fine. Just, like,
he deteriorated very quickly.
It's just COVID. Like,
just COVID. I do love that scene of Gandalf walking into the Hall of Theoden and just the other three beating the shit out of everybody who attacks them around him without him breaking stride.
You wouldn't part an old man from his walking stick, would you?
Got him! The captain of the guard gets fucking destroyed by wargs. I'm like, oh, that's where that guy goes. That's right. And then he gets replaced by Gamli. Couldn't think of another name there, Tolkien. Hey, you have to go with Gamli, the guard captain.
He's gonna try Gimli, make the dwarf. He's going to make him all sound fancy, like, too. So he's like, Scott, fuck. Frank, nah, fuck. Gary, fuck. Gamble, fuck. Fuck. Like,
he didn't realize he wrote Gimli a second time on his typewriter. And so he's just like gone through and like changed the I to an A every time.
Just got slight beer toothpicks and just was like, nah, fuck it. It's fine. Send it off to the presses, everyone. It'll be fine. Too old for this shit. I'm over it. Kieran, any standout things you want to discuss about Two Tails?
It's just a good movie. It's just great. I always marvel at Legolas getting onto that sort. That
no, horse. This is Middle Earth.
What?
Continue. Yep.
Marvel, fucking hell, I get it now. But Legolas getting onto the horse is really weirdly done with CG. Apparently because Orlando Bloom broke his ribs, the horse trick that he was going to do couldn't work. And so they had to do that weird kind of like, it looks really fucking cool, but at the same time it looks really weird. But I love this movie overall. I think it's absolutely fantastic. It leads so well into Return of the King. It's nice to have a trilogy where the middle movie doesn't fucking suck balls and is done really well and keeps the caliber of storytelling throughout the whole thing.
I mean, lots of middle movies.
Yeah, I was about to say Empire, Last Jedi, Back to the Future.
The Last Jedi is good.
Yeah, you specifically said where the middle movie didn't suck. Not that the last movie is good as well.
Dark Knight,
yeah. Okay. There's plenty.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, normally the second and third are either one's good, one's bad.
Yeah. Spider-Man.
Also very funny. Very funny. The orc diving through the sewer holes of blow up.
True champion. That was like a gridiron match.
3 hours to the chest.
Yeah. It took 3 hours to the knee, but.
He was still.
He should have aimed for the knees.
My favorite.
He used to play NRL, but then he took 3 arrows to the knee.
Yeah. My favorite is the fact that he takes the arrows and then like the shot is him just like launching himself like into the hole towards the mines. Just like
the suicide dive, yeah.
Also, minor point that I love the acting between Saruman and Wormtail where they're looking at the bombs and Saruman has to like gently push the candle away that Wormtail is hiding like very closely to the gunpowder.
I don't know why he's even holding it. It was very well lit.
It's just, yeah, little bits and pieces. But no, I'm excited for us to watch Return of the King next week. We're going to be able to see the most famed tomato-eating scene in all of Middle-earth. I'm excited, and this movie is fantastic.
Do you reckon Merry and Pippin ate that waterlogged chicken?
Yeah.
It's a very weird thing for a roasted chicken just to be there in the water.
Well, it's because there's water in the room. Yeah, and
it got flooded.
It was on one of the shelves.
I know, but who roasts a chicken and then just kind of leaves? Well, is it cured? Is that a cured chicken?
They didn't have fridges back in the day, I assume.
Was there an orc wife halfway through the Sunday roast when fucking trees randomly appeared out of nowhere?
Well, this is all Saruman's food, right? So he has
because none of the orcs would.
None of the orcs would get this good food. So it seems like secret sash.
Minor point. I always forget how messed up it is that the Rohirrims and the members of the Fellowship chase the orcs and the Uruk-hai away from Helm's Deep. They're fleeing, and they flee into a forest, and the forest just kills all of them.
Yeah.
Like the forest just... I never get it that when Merry and Pippin see the trees moving, and Treebeard's like, oh, they've got to go see some orcs, that's what he's referring to, is those trees are going to go fuck up the armies from Helm's Deep as they run. Yeah. I don't know why I'd never properly clicked that line until this viewing, where I was like, oh, fuck, that's what he... Okay, fair enough.
I just like how it goes from 0 to 100 so fast. Like, Treebeard. They're like, oh, we decided not to help, and then,
what?
I mean, understandably. I mean, it's literally like he's looking at,
yeah, it's so true. It's like, it doesn't matter until it happens to you, yeah. Right?
And then he sees potentially thousands of his relatives murdered or whatever.
His friends.
His friends, yeah.
His animal friends.
All of that, so... I mean, you know who else could have been in one of those fires? Sylvester McCoy.
Yeah. Radagast could have been in that forest that got burned down, yeah.
Just running around on his rabbits and...
Just sleeping on a tree.
Yeah.
He gets thrown into a fire.
Yeah. There you go. There's your cannon, everyone.
Yep.
Got him.
Solved it.
What are you Googling over there, Karen, before we wrap up? I want to know, what your... Quickly fact
checking. I always forget. No, Radagast was too far away. He lives in Mirkwood. That's the other side.
Nope, he was in those trees.
No, have you seen how fast those rabbits
were? He was visiting.
Yeah. He was visiting a squirrel.
Those Mirkwood jackrabbits.
Got them. All right. That'll do it for this episode of Lord of the Rings Extended.